You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about the four rules of negotiation. Not three, not five.
Four.
Why four rules?
Because this is what we found.
We found four rules.
We create.
We create. The idea of breaking anything down into a small number of components is to help us all understand better something.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because and remember.
If we said the 27 rules of negotiation.
Oh, my gosh.
Forget it.
Yeah.
Just give up. Let them win.
Yes.
But the four rules. Well, if we can perfect the four rules, or we can agree and negotiate better.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
Let me think. Yes.
You do. Okay. So there we go. Our first negotiation, and we were successful. What is the challenge of negotiation? You know, so you walk in and you want to shake somebody's hand and agree on something, or you go in with a big argument. Well, one of the challenges in negotiation is that we're so emotionally hyped up on winning this negotiation, it becomes a power struggle.
Yeah, right? People prefer be right than be happy.
Do you think it's kind of like sports?
Right.
Like we grow up, and a lot of us do, playing sports, and the old the idea is to win, beat the opponent.
Yeah.
That yes, the outcome is you've had a game of baseball, you've had a game of football, a game of soccer, you've had the game, so the objective's the same for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
But it's winning, right, and having the other team lose, which maybe we get trained a little bit of that competitive nature. If we got to win, I got to get the upper hand.
I'm not missing that you are a team.
That you're a team. And not only are you a team, but in a negotiation, whether it's with your partner or with a business,
mm-hmm.
the idea of negotiation is to create a contract, an agreement for the future to work together. So don't lose, what is that? Don't lose focus on...
And the target.
The target.
Versus the make a power for your emotion and destroy the relationship because you want to win.
Exactly. You're correct. You're right.
Okay, got it.
What else? The emotional objectives of fighting, controlling, and winning are presented first. So again, we go into the negotiation wanting to fight, control, and win the negotiation. Everyone wants the upper hand. It can be an internal power struggle on your team. And we were talking about that. Is I go to a negotiation with my CFO, Chief Financial Officer. I go with my engineering director. I go with the president of the company. We all go to this negotiation. And we each want to show that we're the strongest. You know, I'm also, you know, my engineering director and operations director, we go at it because I want to pick something in the negotiation and show my team. So now in my team, I'm competing in my team.
Yeah.
So losing the objective of the win-win between the two companies and looking to be, I want to be the MVP, you know, the most valuable player.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be the quarterback who throws 22 touchdowns. I want to run it in for a touchdown myself and not even throw the ball to any of the other players.
Because I not trust people working with me because I am the more smart person. And that is something that I see so many leadership sometimes. Don't grow up people because I invest more time to somebody do something I prefer do myself.
Right.
So it's done.
So it takes them three times the amount of time it would take me. I'll just do it. But the other is if I teach them how to do it, I lose my power.
Yeah.
I haven't delegated. I've given my power away. So why do they need me now?
Mm-hmm.
But in negotiation, going back to the MVP, most valuable player, I want to be seen as the savior of the company. I got a deal that no one else could get. And I want to get those, if I'm an athlete, I want to get those endorsements. I want the people, I want the public to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm focused on my benefit. You know, what's the benefit to me?
Yeah, versus the organization or the target that you want to achieve.
And it becomes so emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions are really bad. Have no emotions, be robots. We don't mean that specifically or what is that exactly, but we have to weigh the balance between gut feelings and emotions that give us motivation, right? Emotions motivate us to do something, to achieve something. But sometimes if they go too far, they stop us from being able to logically work out the best deal for all involved.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like emotional intelligence.
Yeah. You have to verify or recognize what is the best emotion in what situation. So sometimes you have to be strong, a little child, whatever it is, depend on the context.
So we've brought up emotional intelligence before, which is very important, that if you have people of equal ability on paper in, I don't know, accounting or mathematics or in project management, but one has high emotional intelligence, it turns out that that equates to thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of better income for that person over their lifetime, because they learn how to work with more people and better work with more people. So they may have the skills, they may have the abilities, they may have something exactly at the same level as someone else, technical skills,
mm-hmm.
tactical skills, but they don't have the strategic thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So strategic thinking is part of the emotional intelligence that is needed in negotiation.
And also, I can see these in people so smart, you know, they have a good level in this area or in this area, but not in others. So you can have a high IQ, you can have high emotional intelligence, but sometimes you can lose the control.
What's the first letter of IQ? I. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I. IQ is all about me. Right?
Okay,
this is an example. I'm just making this up right now. It's something we're learning together.
Mm-hmm.
IQ. Where EQ, E is the first letter of everyone. Right? So EQ, everyone, it's an intelligence of everyone. Where IQ is an intelligence of me.
Beautiful. It's my English.
You're cute.
Yeah.
No, that's UQ. You cute. You're cute. I cute. Oh my gosh.
I learn with you.
There we go. We're moving right ahead here. Mm-hmm. What else do we have as a challenge of negotiation?
Mm-hmm.
Another challenge of negotiation is sometimes the real objective of the process that needs to be negotiated may be lost. Or maybe last to be focused on. The objective may be last rather than first. The communication is already muddied with emotions, right? So we already have the communication back and forth between sides at an emotional leveling, that emotions moderate the ability to communicate. And lastly, instincts and fight or flight neuropathways are triggered because of these heightened emotions. If you're working on a very big deal, very big negotiation, you're working with your partner on something, and it's a very difficult conversation. We're talking about business. We're also talking about relationships here.
Something in home, yeah.
In home is that if you have a very important, very emotionally charged subject that you need to negotiate about or discuss about, sometimes we don't talk. And two, we're so upset about something that we finally say something. You know, and that's one of the problems in negotiation, especially in personal relationships, that we don't negotiate until we're pushed so far that we retaliate rather than negotiate.
Mm-hmm. And you have so many predispositions without information or negotiation, you know, because you create your own mind, your
right.
own emotion as you go like the... Not the door, you know, the guy with
it's one-sided.
The joke, yeah.
It's one-sided.
Yeah.
No, go ahead with that, because I think it has to do...
The joke, the guy, the walking, he have a car problem.
Okay.
He's so thinking person, so he tried to change the tire, but I don't need a one tool.
Right.
So he see a house in the top of the mountains and middle of the night, so he walking, but in the way that he walking, he was thinking, no, it's late. Maybe not the door and the people not open. Maybe the people is angry because it's night. Maybe the people have the tool but don't want to leave me because I am a straight person. And he go. So when he knocked the door, he said, no, I don't want your tool. And people say, what?
Yeah. Already assuming the outcome of the negotiation.
Yeah.
And because you're so emotionally charged and you're going through the dialogue in your head. And so many times with our relationships, we do that. Mm-hmm. We take our perspective. We emotionally go over it too much. We kind of obsess about how we feel. Mm-hmm. The emotions shut off our prefrontal cortex. We'll talk about the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex again as we go on with this. The emotions we want to talk about this. If you think about emotions, they give you motivation to do something now. Emotions are mostly about getting you to fight or flight now. Right? They're not like, I'm angry for some long-term benefit. Anger hits and you do or don't do something because of it now. It's a motivating factor. Emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get you in motion. That's what emotions do. They are a now time frame. However, the prefrontal cortex, which is the judging logical portion of our brain, is a forward thinking, future thinking part of our brain. And we need that in negotiation. We're looking for what the end result, what the relationship will be. So when we're talking to our loved one, mm-hmm. and if we're in our emotions, we're looking to solve our emotional problem now, which may just be, I'm angry, I want them to know I'm angry, they're going to get angry at me, and we're all angry, and we never really look at a long-term solution.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions are focused short-term, where the prefrontal cortex and negotiations. So emotions are short-term. Negotiations need to look long-term. So we really need to engage our prefrontal cortex. Negotiations come mm-hmm. from the front of the brain. Let's go back to challenges. We talked about the instincts. We talked about that. Let's see what else we have here. Oh, this is great. I love this story.
Mm-hmm.
So a Harvard professor in their MBA program does this negotiation simulation with students. He sets up some of the class to be suppliers and others manufacturers or clients. The suppliers are providing computer parts to the manufacturer. The manufacturer uses them to build computers and build a system that they then sell to other customers. The professor sets up a negotiation between the client or manufacturer of the computers and the supplier of the computer parts, where it has to do with they're going to argue over pricing and sales volume. Are they selling enough? Sales volume per price, product reliability, quality, specifications for the computer parts. You know, what is the RAM speed? What you promised, what I got. And they're looking at, what they're doing is they're trying to negotiate or renegotiate an 8-month-old contract. And they're going to try to come up with an amended deal, which may be a win-win for both, better for both, terminate the contract because it's just a bad contract, or decide that they're going to go into expensive litigation. The professor sets this up. He puts one person as the supplier, one person as the manufacturer. And he gives them each information on the finances of their own company, of what they can afford, what they can't afford, of what they're really looking for from a standpoint of supply, what other options they may have, you know, alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
And they give, so each of them go into the negotiation with their own little research of their own company and what they're looking for in that negotiation. However, there's a little secret sauce that's added by the professor. He will take one of the students aside and, when no one else is looking, say to the student, and I'll bring this up right here, I want you to start the negotiation with a display of anger. I want you to be angry at the other person that you're negotiating with. So whether it's the supplier or the manufacturer, the professor gives one of them, not both, but one of them, the instruction to go into negotiation angry. Raise your voice, call them names, be unreasonable for 10 minutes. I'm not listening to you. Blame the other person, interrupt them, have a loud voice. Use physical body language. Be aggressive. Point your finger, wave your finger. Oh, don't listen to them. You know, these things, it's basically be kind of angry and rude to the other person. The other person doesn't have this instruction. So this is the whole thing. How do they react? What happens in these negotiations? Are they beneficial? Do they get better outcomes? Do they get worse outcomes? Does the angry person get their way and the person who was being angry towards, who received, was the receiver of the anger, mm-hmm. do they get a bad outcome? What happens? Let's see. So the people who go into the negotiation and get the barrage of insults and blame from the other person, the angry person, react. How do they react? They will act angrily themselves. They may escalate the aggression. And what happens is they lose the ability to calmly think. How do you think that goes over?
Disaster.
Disaster. And it is. It's a disaster. And it's a, what do they call it? Unmitigated disaster. The results of the experiment are, the more anger shown, the more likely the negotiation ends poorly in litigation or an impasse. No deal. You know, contract, don't amend it, don't get benefits for both, just disrupt it, break it, break, void the contract. The anger in negotiation disrupts the process, derails the solution train, takes the solution right off the rail track, off the train track, and has a profoundly negative effect on the outcome. This isn't a business negotiation. And if this does this in a business negotiation, where there may not need to be as many feelings as a relationship, just imagine when you have anger with
your
feelings.
Lover, with your family, with your boyfriend, girlfriend, yeah.
Because not only anger, now you're hurt. Mm-hmm. Somebody's embarrassed. Somebody's been criticized. It's multiple emotions mm-hmm. on top of each other.
Yeah.
And so negotiation, these emotions get in the way, whether in business or in personal life. Emotions just are no good in negotiation. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about emotions, negotiations, and the four rules of negotiation on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Tim.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about the four rules of negotiation. We always go into, what, a little bit of psychology in these things?
Yeah.
Almost all life is psychology when you think about it. You think about it.
If you know,
or maybe it's philosophy.
Yeah.
Philosophy, psychology, it's all that if you think about it. Mm-hmm. The mind is, you know, the psyche, It's the essence of who we are, what we do, and how we relate to the world. Going back to this is the neuroscience of negotiation is our subject here. So the neuroscience of negotiation, as we are talking about emotions in negotiation, what happens actually physically, chemically in our brain when we start going into these emotions? They may rage. If our emotions rage out of control, we'll lose the ability to clearly think. We know that. We see red. You've heard the expression, see red, right? The amygdala handles emotion, and the prefrontal cortex handles judgment. So when we get like really angry, really upset, our amygdala kicks in, it tells other parts of our body to throw chemicals into our body, which cause us to tense up. They cause our heart rate to go up. They cause our blood pressure to go up. Our eyes intensely focus. Things happen physically, right? And that's the amygdala interacting. It's like the center of emotion. We do that, and it's normal. It's natural.
Yeah.
But people, and let's go to marketing. We talked about this at one point. Marketing uses our emotions to get us to do something now that we may not actually want to do if we had time to think about it.
You know? So many people go to this trend.
Yeah, exactly. What is it? You know, you go drive down the road and you're driving down the highway and you see a big sign with a juicy burger and a milkshake and you like all of a sudden your mouth waters. You feel like one of Pavlov's dogs. And you're like, I got to go to McDonald's or Burger King or XYZ company because I wasn't thinking it, but this just, you know, we get triggered by tastes, but it's not taste. We get triggered by the visual thing. We have visual objects that make us do things emotionally that we weren't thinking about doing.
Yeah.
Right.
So
that happens in marketing. Marketing is trying to trigger our emotions. Well, what happens in negotiation is that the stress of the situation, whether it's personal or business, may create and prime us for having reactions, emotional reactions that move us away from a good negotiation.
And also for the judgment part. So when you are in the middle of some negotiation or conversation with your partner and you start to judge people, you lose power because the people don't want to feel judgment versus...
Got it. Mm-hmm. So we're judging the person giving the information rather than the underlying situation. So we may not, like if we don't like the person we're negotiating with, we may start missing the fact that underlying the deal is good. We may miss that, right?
Yeah, and also that is happen a lot with father or mother to the kid. Mm. So the parents always judge the kid and the kid block the conversation. Because they don't want to feel judged. They want to have connection with the parent. But the parents sometimes have really strong judgment.
And then I don't want to listen.
Yeah.
Okay, I can understand that. People feel insulted or they feel judged. And then they cut off
the
communication.
The communication, non-negotiation.
And that can happen in a family. Can happen in business. You know,
yeah.
If somebody in the room in negotiation just... once the upper hand talks down to other people, you can say, you know what, I don't want to deal with them. And even if you were thinking that you're going to come out with a good deal, you just like, you know what, no more.
Mm-hmm.
Right, no more. Let's go back to this then. So the prefrontal cortex can switch off your emotions and keep them in proportion. So remember, you can use your brain to control your amygdala. You can use your prefrontal cortex to control your emotions. Some of the ways to do that, to control your amygdala, is relaxation techniques. Try to move away from that emotion, a deep breath. Cognitive control techniques, we'll talk about that in a second. And practice using judgment to override emotional reactions, which means you should have tricks and thoughts of how do I get back to judgment and away from emotion? And you may say, okay, for me to analyze this deal, I have to again look at my objectives and look at what they're offering and how the offering matches my objectives and see where they meet. Now I'm judging their offering. I'm not judging how they presented them. I'm not judging their personality. I start judging what they're offering. And they may be actually offering something good, but I just don't like the person who's offering it. And maybe I am biased because maybe it's just because of the emotional situation of the negotiation that I don't like them. It's like when we do play a game of football or a game of baseball, we don't like the other team because they're the other team. It doesn't mean, like if these same players were on our team, we might be best friends and best buddies. I don't like them because they're so good at negotiating.
Yeah, and also it's difficult to separate the person with the issue, you know.
It is difficult. Go back to cognitive control techniques. So if we know that we are overridden by our own emotions, we can use cognitive behavioral therapy, which means we can look at little behavioral actions that we can do to move us away from emotion. Like we said, logically putting down a list of here's what I'm looking for, here's what they're offering, see where they meet and where they have gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're moving towards a action that takes you away from the emotion. The other is the thinking part. Is understand when you recognize, right, when you admit that your emotion is taking you over, you can, the first part of getting better at being overwrought with emotions is to understand that that's what's happening. I understand I'm being driven by my emotion. And as soon as you say that, you basically face, what is it called? You don't avoid. You are aware now, and you approach the emotion and go, hey, emotion, why do I feel that way? And that's one thing, is ask yourself, why do you feel the way you feel? There may be a good reason for it.
And also the moment they recognize, I have one outed recently, and the customer, when I say, you have a gap here, you have a finding, and the person becomes so emotional, you know, because the person working hard, don't have any gap in the assessment and reaction. And I know normally I have to wait for the reaction coming down. I explain what happened. But the interesting part for this is the person say, the next day, because it's 4 days out, so the next day in the morning say, last night I was sleeping at all, thinking in this moment, and I recognize that I overreaction, and I appreciated this and blah, blah, blah. So when I see that, I feel respect for the person because has the capacity, they have the emotion high, but take a time to recognize and then put also, before we start the next day, I want to put this on the table to explain that she recognized that she had.
And you then connect better with the person.
Yeah, definitely.
So a couple of weeks ago, we talked about instant rapport and the benefit of rapport, of understanding the person before communicating, is that you better understand how they're communicating. And this kind of sounds like they're giving you insight into themselves and into their personality. They're revealing themselves. And as they reveal themselves, you open up better communication. So in negotiation, it's always good to establish a baseline of who these people are. Is where do you connect? What do you have in common? Because the more you can feel that you at least think you may be able to trust them and you like them, right? Trust is very important. Consistency and trust of the other person, knowing who they are before the negotiation is always important. So if you can do a little bit of research. Now, with your loved one, you should know a little bit about them, but you can also think about it before you have that negotiation. Like, I know sometimes I get this way when I talk to Lizette, and I know she reacts this way, so I need to be aware if I am to do that, I need to not do that. And you kind of think about what you're going to be talking about, because that way maybe you can present the negotiation better. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question. With all these challenges of negotiation, do you think we should get to those 4 rules of negotiation?
I hope.
You hope. 4 rules of negotiation. We are ready for them now. Let's see. Number 1, create value to the greatest extent possible. Right? So what does this mean, Lizette? You don't know? Mm-hmm. Okay, we don't know. Let's move on. No. The point about negotiation is that you need to show to the other side the value of what you're offering prior to negotiation. So you need to show that, and this talked about business, within your own organization, you have to show the benefit within your own organization of how you can connect to.
It has to be clear what is the benefit for both sides. Because if you are sitting for any kind of negotiation with 2 parts, there has to be clear 2 parts what is and have intention to negotiate. If one of the parties say, I don't want to negotiate, invest your time.
Exactly.
You know, so that is the first value. Okay, we want to negotiate the price of this book. Okay, so you are interested in the book, me too, and this is the store, so we need to figure out how we negotiate that so we understand the value.
Mm-hmm. And I'll go to equipment. Like, I purchase equipment for a company. I need to know what I need the equipment for, the value of it in my organization, how it impacts what we're able to do, what it requires. And now I start thinking, what does it require from the person who supplies it? I need to understand their value, right? What's the value they create? Do they have a good service organization? Do they have a good reputation? Are they using good components? That you want to understand the value propositions of both to understand where they overlap. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't overlap, you may save yourself a lot of time and not negotiate. But the point is if there's a lot of overlap in value, it's you're trying to find common value. You know, for the other company that makes the machinery, they want to employ people. Is their factory busy right now? No, it's not. So if I can give you an order now that I need you to build now, you may be able to get me a better deal or throw in some additional features and benefits into what you're providing me.
But also, I asked the question for you. If you put this an example for feeling or couple, want to negotiate something, some want to go to the vacation or they want to stay at home. So how you can put values in these negotiations?
Well, one, if you say the number one value of that we have is we get to spend time with each other. Mm-hmm. So let's look at what the benefit, forget what the specific vacation is. Mm-hmm. What's the benefit to us of going on vacation?
So how you create value there?
How do you create value? We get to spend time with each other. We get to do new things with each other.
We can do it at home.
But we don't have new situations at home. Maybe.
Okay, it's point to you.
We may not have the challenges. I mean, to be in an area where we're both like, maybe I'm comfortable here at home and you're less comfortable, or maybe you're more comfortable in one area than I am. One of the things, we did one on vacations, a show on vacations a long time ago, and it had to do with how vacations can really help a couple because they're facing new experiences together, maybe new challenges together. Mm-hmm. They may be able to do something like they go to a restaurant they would have never gone to, or they go to a beach they would have never gone to. So they have beautiful memories. They do it together. So here are all the benefits. Now, whether we do this in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Florida, somewhere else, if we know the goal is to spend this time together.
So that you create value in the negotiation versus they say, oh, you don't want to leave with me, or you know, or you want to stay in home because you don't want to waste money. Blah, blah, blah. Okay.
It could be. Could be that. Let me get back to this here. So there, we talked about this just a second ago. Identifying the alignments of interest that help you and those with which you plan to collaborate. So where do our goals align? And we just talked about that. Our goal is to go away, have somebody else take care of us for a couple of days, meaning we have someone who cooks for us, we have somebody who takes care and cleans the room for us, we don't have to think about certain things, and so that's our alignment of interest. That would be personally, what's our alignment of interest in, I don't know, buying a coffee maker? I want the best tasting coffee ever. I want it to be automatic. I want it to be manual because I like the control of being able to make the coffee.
Really? You like the control?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just saying that. The grind, baby. It's a grind. Mm-hmm. Specify resources that give you energy and channel them to achieve the necessary results. So what resources, and I'll show it up here, specify resources that give you energy and channel them to achieve the necessary results.
So the resource is sometimes we start to negotiate something without recognizing the resource that we need. And resource can be time, money, and always the emotion missing that. If you put the resource in the top, maybe you can balance better decision versus.
So you say we don't have a lot of money for this trip, but we had a lot of time. Mm-hmm. We may do something else. We may focus on those because that gives us something to do. But if we say this requires a lot of
time,
it may be sapping the energy out of our vacation. Mm-hmm. So we want to see what adds to our overall benefit of this vacation versus what takes away. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go to the beach. But if we have to travel 2 miles to go to the beach, and we have to get a car, and we have to put every stuff into the car, and we've got to figure out how to get the stuff out of the car and go to the beach, rather than we're just going to get a hotel on the beach. And then we get up in the morning and we just walk to the beach. You know, and you look at, okay, I have to pay a little more money, but it gives me more time to be on the beach with less difficulty, less stress. So, so you start weighing the different resources that you have, what costs there are.
And this helps a lot for the negotiation because it's something more objective versus emotion to put in the table. So I have my emotion, I want to go to the Machu Picchu mountain. But when you see the resource, maybe that is not a good idea because you don't have time or you don't have energy or you don't have money or you don't have... And then your emotion, you can drain away.
You drain your emotion when you don't, when it doesn't live up to what your expectation was. Yeah. So number one, again, is create the greatest value up front as to what we may get out of this if this negotiation goes well. The number two... Make sure that you do both capture an appropriate share of value created. Meaning, if you are working with another company, you both have to get value out of the relationship. If you're working with your partner about negotiating a vacation, you both need to have value. It must value both of you. You want to move towards the most important goals that you're trying to achieve. You may have five goals you want to achieve, but figure out which are the most important ones and make sure they're important to both of you and move towards them. The capturing the, what is it called? Equitable value. Now, it doesn't mean the same value. It means equitable. You may value being on the beach for 4 hours. I may value not having to drive in a hot, dirty, sandy car for 2 hours to get to the beach. And so we compromise that your benefit of value is the time on the beach, mine is how we get there. And I say, okay, you know what? I want to be on the beach because I don't want to have to drive. And you say, okay, we're on the beach. So we both get value out of it. And it's different value, but we negotiate that.
And also the when I told you earlier about the, when you want to go to do the negotiation, you need to understand that you bring something and maybe you lose something. You know, always win-win. But that is the point, the negotiation. Sometimes I can say, okay, I don't like, I love the beach, but you lie. But maybe we in the night, we have a nice restaurant area. I like the restaurant around the beach, not the beach per se. So I sacrifice 1 hour in for ocean versus a good restaurant and you sacrifice any other. So that's is the way that you cannot go to the negotiation and say, oh, that is my point, that is my line.
My way to the highway. My way or the highway. Yeah. Have you heard that? My way or the highway.
No, but
I have something to give.
Yeah.
Okay, I give something. Going back to this here, although it's gratifying to help others, evaluate at what extent helping is beneficial or not. Meaning, if you're helping others, like helping the other side, I'm helping them. Maybe this is a new business area that they're trying to get into and I'm going to try to help them get into it. And I'm like, well, at the end of the day, is helping them get into it, is it beneficial to me or not? Maybe it's not. Maybe by helping them get into this, they now sell some of our competitors the same thing. And then all of a sudden the competitors know what we're doing and they know how we're doing it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I might just want to go with somebody who already is in this area of business. And therefore, I'm not helping them get into a business and learn more about our business. So is helping somebody actually helpful to yourself as well? Or is it only helpful to them? And finally, you cannot put your own goal at risk at the expense of helping others or in coming up with a mutual, you know, I can't give up all my goals just so you're happy.
Yeah, that's it. No, it's like they, you know, burn yourself to be warm the room.
So again, the number two rule was make sure that each person in the negotiation gets an appropriate share of the value.
90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and Jim Gulnick.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about the third and fourth rule of negotiation after we just talked about the first and second rule of negotiation. The third rule of negotiation: build and maintain important relationships. Try not to get so much value. Like the last rule was get your share of value, but don't get so much of your own share that it damages your relationship with the other person. Be careful about influencing people in ways that could be perceived as selfish or manipulative. So you may want people to do what you need to do, but if all of a sudden, like a couple of days later, they go, I feel like I was manipulated. They got some benefit and I didn't get that benefit. Mm-hmm. Then maybe next time they don't want to negotiate with you, or they lose trust. So we talk about trust a lot, that trust, consistency, congruency in negotiation, in communication.
Yeah, also the first point, the damage, the relationship, sometimes you need to balance. If you are negotiating a book, if maybe you destroy your friendship with somebody just for a simple book versus the value of your relationship, and sometimes you say, okay, you know what?
So let me ask a question. When is it a good time to risk damaging your relationship?
When your life is
when it's unhealthy.
Yeah.
It's so if your relationship is not going well, maybe it's time to risk it in negotiation. Meaning, I need for this relationship to survive. I need this. Mm-hmm. And some people are scared. Oh, I want to stay in the relationship so badly, I won't actually have a relationship. Like I will not communicate because I don't want to. I don't want to break communication by communicating. You know what I mean? It's like...
No. So the strange one is when you see couple want to divorce and stay married because they don't want to lose the money.
Mm.
But the marriage is so toxic. The marriage, the people is sick. They is angry. Is depressed. But I stay married. So that is the moment that you need to negotiate the who is the house, who is the take the car and leave your... peace life versus stuck in one because you don't want to negotiate.
And when you're emotionally charged in an angry divorce, you know who benefits?
The lawyer.
The lawyer. The lawyer can take it. What was this? I went to Williamsport, Pennsylvania many years ago, and I took a tour of the city. And they showed me, like the bus tour shows, this is the original church over here. And over here was the grocery store. And over here was the hardware store. And over here was the cemetery. And over here, and they showed all this. And then they showed the two lawyer offices. You can't have one lawyer. They have no one to sue. But the point is that is negotiations, if you have the same objective, even through the hardships of divorce, the objective is for you both to come out as whole as possible. And if you can move away from the emotions and go, how do we both benefit to some extent from this, rather than have to try to survive without getting the divorce, that's when you risk the relationship.
Yeah, and you destroy also the complete family. Sometimes you be blind and you destroy the relationship. And you have a kid, so also the kid is part of the collateral damage.
And when people see you destroying the relationship, what can that do? That can ruin your reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ruin a negotiation, people see your reputation as ruining a negotiation. When you ruin a relationship, you ruin your reputation. Gaining a reputation as a tough, creative, and trustworthy negotiator is important, and also fair. How about fair? Consider all negotiations inside and outside the organization or your relationship as an opportunity to build and reinforce your reputation. Be consistent, right?
Mm-hmm.
A good reputation is an asset that is invaluable to a transitional leader. As well as a good reputation is invaluable to any human being. You have to work, fight, communicate to get a good reputation. You have to display it.
Yeah.
Integrity is part of that. Maintain it in every interaction. So the fourth rule is reputation.
No, so reputation is powerful, okay? So reputation is something that you know create like that, take a time. But when you have, if you somebody want to negotiate for take a two auction, maybe it can be two lawyer or two realtor or two boyfriends, you know? So the which one have more reputation, that is more transparent, is more honest, is more this, has to be more powerful to make this decision for through this person versus the person that is sometimes is liar, sometimes it's not transparent, it's manipulated. So you say, I don't feel comfortable will work somebody, no.
So a consistent reputation gives a level of trust as well.
Yeah.
Is that you may not like the reputation in a way because, okay, they're a tough negotiator, but you may know that you can trust whatever they negotiate. And therefore, you know, I want to deal with them. I know they're going to be tough. It's going to be a tough negotiation. But I know whatever the end result is, I know that they're going to live with that result and we're going to live with that result.
If the other person is so smart to recognize the reputation, because some people fall in love and emotion and passion versus the reputation and go to the other direction. So everything is perfect.
So we're going to roll into a summary of negotiation. We're going to talk a little bit more personally in negotiation. Is that a relationship in negotiation is perceived connection between people. So the relationship that has to precede the negotiation is a relationship, whether it's a strong relationship or a weak one, one where you know the person or you don't. As we talked about last week in rapport, knowing the underlying cultural background, education, family, business, where they live geographically, you will get a better understanding of the person in order to have the... And relationship just means you know where you are in relationship to where they are. Like, I know where Lizette is in relationship to how she grew up, and she knows me in relationship to where she grew up, and we can communicate better because of that. Same in a business negotiation. That this relationship is two-way communication, back and forth. It's a strong commitment to each other's interests. It focuses on reliability, consistency, and congruency. And respect for the contribution of the other. And part of that is we talk about reputation. These all fit with the other four, but here we go. Again, negotiation in relationship or in business is two-way communication. You need to have a strong commitment to the other's interests. You need to be reliable, consistent, and congruent, both people in the negotiation. And you need to respect what the other person brings to the table and what the contributions they have and why you need to find a benefit for them as well as a benefit for you. This win-win thing, you may go through it like years and years ago, I remember, win-lose, lose-win, lose-lose, win-win, win-win-win. You know, not only do we win and you win, but all our customers win, our family wins. You know, where is that greater win?
Mm-hmm. That is when you see the more interesting party involved have benefit.
And to bring that one step further, what does that mean? Two-way communication, when we are negotiating, you need to understand the other before seeking to be understood. Stephen Covey always said that. We always say that. You have to understand the person. You have to understand the relationship you have in order to understand them and to so they can understand you. A strong commitment to each other's interests. Reassurance of support for your partner. So if we're negotiating a vacation and Lizette tells me something, I need to indicate that I understand what her desire, her wants, her requirements are. So then when we start negotiating where we're going, she knows I'm taking that into account in my suggestion. Reliability, and we talked about this, reliability, consistency, and congruency. In a relationship, let's talk about personal relationship, showing up, being present, actively engaging in the negotiation, in the communication,
mm-hmm.
authentically.
Yes.
Not like, oh, yes, I understand. Oh, that's, yes, that means. I've seen people talk like this.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, how was your weekend? Oh, really? That sounds fantastic. And they walk out and it's like, they didn't care.
Also for salespeople, you know, they sometimes acting. You remember the guy with the car and I say where I come from. And the people say, oh, wow, is this a fake?
They don't care.
They don't care where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And they say, I'm from Iceland.
So. Iceland, yeah. Iceland, right near New Zealand? No.
No.
That's not. Greenland, no.
And then he said, you see the color of the car? And I said, okay, it's so interesting where
it's
I
so
come
great,
from.
So great, yeah. Oh, and last year we talked about respect for the contribution of the other. Recognize, and this is something that we say in a partnership, recognize the dedication, love, holistic essence of your partner. So in a personal relationship, if you have respect for the other person and you recognize the dedication that Lizette has to us in our relationship, the love she has, the holistic essence of your partner, which is spiritual, physical, mental, everything, the aura, the awesomeness of the person.
And your capacity to recognize.
Right. Recognize.
Everything. Yeah.
So. Recognize those around you. And in that way, your negotiations will give you strength. And strength comes from, what does strength come from? The alternatives you have. The greater your bargaining power and the less need to reach a particular agreement. Again, the more you know your partner, the more you know the options that are available, the more that they can overlap, and you can both get a win-win-win out of your negotiation. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Have a great week and negotiate well.
See you next
week. You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara. Only on LA Talk Radio.